99, proceeded.
Redbird Sports Talk. Interviews and professional sports news all in one place.
Redbird's playing a lot on the outside. Open three for Poindexter. Got it.
The quarterback just couldn't figure out the passing game.
You're listening to Red Zone, only on 103.3 WZND. Blasting off in 3, 2, 1.
Happy Thursday, birds. Welcome into this edition of the Red Zone. Mike Finelli, Braden Fogerson, and Ben Hootie coming at you for another edition on a Thursday night. So let's start, gentlemen. We have a lot of Redbird stuff to get to, but first and foremost, how are we doing on this fine day?
It's good. It's nice and cool. I talked about yesterday. I don't really have a good AC in my apartment, so it's so nice that it is like cool again. Because
what do you do when it's like really sticky? Like
I get miserable, and all like I am the easiest to get hot out of all my roommates. So I am the one that's in charge of like opening windows and running the fans because none of them really notice it like I do.
Bro's the commissioner of conditioner.
Yeah, exactly.
Exactly. Ben, what about you?
What are you going to ask?
What's it like in your apartment?
It's beautiful.
Really?
We're in like a basement kind of thing.
Yeah.
It's not actually a basement, but we're on the bottom floor, so it acts like a basement.
Yeah, half basement.
So we're cool down there. We're chilling. No complaints ever, really.
This is how Mikey invites himself to your apartment.
Yeah. What? Well, I got to see both of you guys because I want to go over to both of your guys' place next time it's hot so I can see who truly has it worse because I believe that Braden truly has it bad, but like also he might be being, like you said yourself, self-proclaimed sensitive about it. So maybe you are like just used to the surroundings. Like I'm wondering if I walk in, would I truly be like, oh my God, I'm sweating, or like if it's like, oh, this is moderate.
Well, it doesn't have like vents. It's like it's one really poorly running AC. Like my apartment last year had nice vents. It was nice. The difference is crazy. You don't notice it till you don't have it. So
you don't notice it till you don't have it. That's been a motto in college basketball recently as the Redbirds lose Miles Foster to the transfer portal. But today they make their first official transfer signing for Bowden Skunberg, and that's where we start. 1 year of eligibility remaining for Bowden. Addy comes from ND State. He led them in scoring with 14 points per game. He led them in boards with 168, second in assists with 66, shot 80% from the free throw line, a 6'5 guard, two-time Summit League honorable mention. This is a pretty solid pickup for Ryan Peden and the Birds.
Feels a lot different than the pickups last year. I feel like last year they got a couple guys from, you know, these big powerhouse programs that just weren't really able to make a name for themselves there and were trying to reignite that fire at Illinois State. But, you know, this is a guy in the Summit League that had a really solid year this year. He was Summit League honorable mention in 2022 and 24. You mentioned those 14 points a game, and say the Summit League is, you know, just as competitive as the MVC. So
mm-hmm.
Once again, I mean, we've seen Oakland come out of the Summit League this past year. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, maybe those numbers will only go up in his, what would this be, his fifth year or fourth?
I'm not sure. He only has 1 year of eligibility left.
So I would assume this is probably his fifth year.
Probably his fifth or sixth year at max. It cannot be just his normal fourth. And yeah, like you said there, Ben, there's a lot of adjacency between the Missouri Valley and the Summit League. In fact, a lot of the same teams are in the Missouri Valley Football Conference.
Yeah.
In South Dakota State, North Dakota, and North Dakota State is where we're getting Mr. Bowden Skunberg from, and Denver, which is like the best hockey school of all time. I don't know if that's the same conference they're in for hockey, but they just won the Hockey National Championship again. They win every single year. They're like the Vanderbilt or the Oklahoma softball of hockey. But anyway, Braden, what do you think about this signing? And I'll cue it in with this, like Ben kind of alluded to. Getting the best player from another mid-major feels a bit more impressive than getting a Brandon Lieb or something like that from a bench player from a Big Ten school.
That's actually what I was going to talk about. You had some of the players from bigger schools, you mentioned, coming down, and they didn't pan out, but you had some players that didn't come from there that really did, and that's what turned this team around. So it's good to see that, you know, Illinois State is open to anyone that's willing to come into the program and make a good fit as opposed to just saying, well, he's from a big school, he's going to work. And I think that as you get more and more of these years, you'll get a better idea of what you're looking for.
And we've seen it in the past, too, now with North Dakota State is higher than these Division II schools, but I feel like it's better that these players are getting minutes under their belt, and kind of similar to what we saw with Miles Foster and Paige Robinson in years past, where they were the best players on their Division II teams, came to Illinois State and ended up being the best players on these Illinois State teams after impressive Division II careers. So you just want to hope that Skjundberg is kind of able, just after a full year playing really well, 14 points a game, was one of the better players on North Dakota State team, that he just can continue to develop and be a really good piece for this Redbird team that a lot of people are projecting super high right now, if you guys have seen.
And those Bison, sorry, they actually played Illinois State earlier this past season. Illinois State beat them 75-65, so must have seen something there. Illinois State went on an 18-2 run to beat them there, so must have seen something and been able to learn something. Skjundberg had 7 boards in that game, so definitely got to like that out of a guard. You don't typically see that many board getters on Illinois State as of late.
Well, and this is a year in which the Missouri Valley has been rewritten a little bit, too. We talked about Braden's famous quote a couple weeks ago about how you can't get excited to preview a team if they just come up short the year before because you don't know what the roster will look like the year later. We don't know what the rest of the roster will look like in the Missouri Valley either, but we can tell you that Drake finally got torn apart. Robbie Avila is leaving Indiana State. I don't think he's made a commitment
Indiana
yet.
State roster
the entire and really their leaving. Coach, they're all gone. Bradley's fallen apart, and so is you and I. So there's, I mean, those are 4 teams in the top 5 or 6 in this conference that are all going to be completely shaken up going into the 2024-25 year. And you have an ISU team that, aside from Miles Foster, has remained relatively sound based on what they had last year. Not to say they were the 96 Olympic team last year, but they had a solid end of the year, and they've remained pretty solid.
Yeah, you laid a foundation, and now what do you do with it now that you've proven to any potential recruits, what this team can do when they're starting to fire? And, now what do you do with it? That's the question. It's also going to be interesting to see playing against St. Louis. Yeah, it's one game, but you'll be playing against that, former coach of Indiana State. And it seems to me they didn't get quite as many people to transfer from the Sycamores to the Billikens as they initially thought. So we'll
supposedly, Avila visited SLU, but I don't think he's made an official.
He won't end up there.
I think
he is too much of a recognize college basketball name at this point. It would make sense if he has loyalty to his coach. And when I saw it, I thought that honestly would be the place that he's going to. But the way that some of these college basketball accounts I see on social media are talking about it, like we're talking big time Big Ten schools. Even I even saw UConn potentially throw their name in the ring for him as well, which is just it's insane to think where this kid came from, and now he's going to be one of the top recruited players in the country.
Led Indiana State to a 32-7 season all the way to the NIT championship. Hey, let's take some time real quick on some softball and baseball before we get Daniel Pacella in the studio for the second segment. Let's start with some softball. They are 11-7 in conference, winners of 4 straight. We had Hannah Meshnick on the show last week, thanks to her, and she talked a lot about this team still has the team. They have the capability to continue to play well in this Valley schedule, and then they swept Valpo last weekend following that, and then beat Bradley yesterday to sweep that season series against Bradley. Pitching depth is not necessarily their forte right now, but they're finding ways to win against other Valley opponents.
Yeah, they've been really solid. I think that they've been able to get things going and to be able to beat up on Bradley a little bit. They're still behind them because the tiebreaker isn't head-to-head, but sitting in 5th in the conference, and you get to play at home for the conference tournament. So
that is a big part of it, right? And it's huge. You get 8 out of 10 teams make it. They're looking pretty sound to not miss that cut. It's just similar to what kind of happened last year with them as well. Really tough start against some nationally ranked teams, and just get into conference play, get your feet wet a little bit, and things start to go really well. And this weekend, I was able to watch 2 out of the 3 Valparaiso games. First one was just a domination all across the board. Great hitting and pitching as well. And then Sunday was a thriller, and they ended up making a nice 2-run comeback in the bottom half of the 7th. So you really like what you've seen these last 4 games, and hope they could keep it up as they head into Indiana State this weekend.
Yeah, it's weird playing the same team on both.
Right?
I mean, usually it's pretty similar. Like, for example, Valpo played baseball one weekend and then softball the next. It's usually close, but to see them each play each other just in each other's home.
Yeah.
Is a little.
And it's not even like they could share a bus, because the softball team's going to Terre Haute and the baseball team will be home against Indiana State, the top of the Missouri Valley, nationally attention team in the country right now, the Sycamores. It's kind of funny. Ben pointed out before the show started, I'm getting mixed results if they're currently nationally ranked. Do we think they are at 20?
I saw it on I think it was D1 college.
Okay.
D1 college baseball on Instagram.
My guess is the rankings came out today or something like
it,
that.
It
like
might have been yesterday. Midweek.
Okay, yeah. So I'm sure that's just getting updated. But they are around that 23 range, and that is exactly where ISU and ISU were when they did battle in Terre Haute for men's basketball. Yep. And then we dethroned Indiana State at that time. So this ISU baseball team, too, is a lot hotter than the men's basketball team ever was at that point. They are having a great season, one of their best in the last decade. They are 7-5 in conference, 19-15 overall. They're having a really solid year. A lot of that is Daniel Pacella and a lot of these Redbird bats. We'll talk to him more about that in the next segment. But previewing it without Dan real quick, this is a huge series this weekend. They're calling it Stuff the Duff for a reason. They want people there. This is the top of the Missouri Valley. This can mean a number one seed option for the Missouri Valley Conference Tournament in the regular season championship.
And they've been really good. They've had a lot better pitching than you had in the very beginning of the year. They've had a couple, you know, shutouts even. I mean, just being able to prove that your team can do well when you have the pitching to back it up has been great. And, you know, facing Lindenwood, you had two home runs on the road. You had to wait an extra day to get it, but getting another win added on to your total, they are knotted up with four other teams in terms of record in the conference. And, you know, to face a team as tough as Indiana State, you know, if you can't win the series against them, then you understand that it's because they're super good. But if you can win the series, then they are for real.
Yeah, really tough weekend this weekend in Evansville. But one of the things that we've seen most of this Illinois State baseball team is their way that they answer back. I got a win in Lindenwood yesterday. But, yeah, just answering back, they were right in the thick of things with Indiana State going into the weekend against Evansville. So this could be a huge series to make a statement, not just for the rest of the Missouri Valley Conference, but even potentially nationally.
Ben, you pointed out that win against Lindenwood. There also was a win against Western Illinois a week ago. U of I, they lost 10-6. But a couple of times they had those midweek games canceled. The first option against U of I, a game against SIUE, canceled in the midweeks. So during that seven-game win streak, it had a bunch of midweeks canceled, so they got more Valley wins, but also an asterisk, it seemed like. But they've been able to do pretty good in those midweek games since then with that 2-1 record, beating Lindenwood last night 8-6. They're going to get into a little bit more of a Valley schedule throughout, but they're still going to have those Big Ten midweeks. You got Northwestern on the 23rd on that Tuesday, who they have already played once this year. You got Iowa coming up, another one against Western, and then kind of just rounding out the year with some more Missouri Valley Conference baseball. Any final thoughts on the baseball team before we bring in Daniel Pacella?
No, I'm just excited to be able to talk to him, and you know, I think you guys were able to talk to him last year, so we'll get to see what's new with him. He's been able to improve. He's been able to get better. He homered yesterday, so we'll see how he's feeling.
Ben, you and I did that interview with Dan last year before you were even a Red Zone host. You were just one of our reporters, and we had you in on that. That was on Zoom though. That was not in person.
Yeah. No. Yeah, it'll be nice. I'm excited to have him in. He's right in the window behind us right now. So
yeah, we'll be good. All right, when we come back, we'll have Daniel Pacella join the Red Zone. Seven home runs, including one last night in the win against Lindenwood. Daniel Pacella joins the Red Zone. Pleasure to have you on the show.
Yeah, thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
So you guys got a big weekend series coming up. We talked a little bit during the break. We got to correct ourselves. Indiana State is not technically nationally ranked by D1 baseball, but they're receiving votes, and they're a formidable opponent in the Missouri Valley.
Oh, yeah. No, they've been really good for a long time, and when we played them last year, like, they were a really tough team to beat. But, I mean, we put up a really good fight. I mean, all three games were, like, one run, two run difference. So I think this weekend could be really big for the Birds.
So what's the scouting look like? How far ahead are you looking at a series that you have planned ahead? And, you know, how did that work in terms of planning for this one?
Yeah, so we always look at usually their weekend starters first. We take a look at, like, who they're bringing out. They have the big lefty coming out Friday night. So we always go with the scouting report on their starters. And then we kind of break down, like, who their main reliever is going to be. And we can kind of, you know, get our preparation set on what those guys are going to be looking like. So, for example, I mean, the lefty tomorrow, we already had machines setting up of, like, all right, this is what his fastball is going to look like and his breaking ball. And we can kind of get that prep work in a day early. So, but no, they're a really good team. And I think we're going to be a good opponent for them for sure.
Tough weekend in Evansville, but you guys have been really good overall this year.
Yeah.
What are the vibes like in that clubhouse right now, especially heading into a series like Indiana State?
Yeah, I think it was a tough three games, especially with Saturday being that tough of a loss. I mean, we were supposed to win that ball game, and it unfortunately ended at the last inning or so. But no, I think all the guys were, like, super positive. We know that when we're on, we can beat anybody. And it's shown. I mean, the record this year is so much better than last year. We've been doing a lot better at staying consistent with our approaches. Pitchers are starting to find it on the mound. So I think the vibes are definitely better than what it usually is after getting swept by a team. And I mean, we were on a 6-game road trip, so I think it was huge that we can get home, get well rested for this series, and I'm excited to see what it has to come.
Not to discount anybody, but a couple of your guys' top four bats, you, Luke, JT, you guys are putting together a great stretch at the top of that order. What's it like when you know when every time you get on base, and with 44 RBIs a season, you might have ducks in the pond?
Yeah, so when it's fun because Luke Lawrence, I mean, he's my roommate, and literally it seems like every time I'm up to plate, like he's already on base for me. So that's the best feeling, is being like a hitter where I want to drive in runs. I want to have the spotlight on me as much as I can. And when there are guys on base, it just gives you a little bit more fire in the box, because you know, like, one swing of the bat can change a ball game. So I think having those guys that not only are their batting averages good, but they're on base percentages, like JT, I mean, he's up there almost 500 on base. So knowing that he's going to get on base almost one out of every two times, huge for us as hitters to be able to come up in big spots. And I think this year we've done such a better job at, you know, doing the small ball things, like moving a guy over with a bunt, where last year we didn't have that tool. So if we only relied on bats, like, we're just not going to get it done. Mm-hmm. So I think having multiple tools in our arsenal is huge for us. And for example, like those guys getting on base, it makes my job and all the other guys' job way easier.
So offense is only half the battle, though. So how is it with you being teammates with your pitchers? How often are you, you know, talking with, hanging out with your pitchers as opposed to your fellow offensive players?
Oh, yeah. So, I mean, baseball is obviously a big team sport, so everybody on the team is pretty well meshed, and we're always trying to do things as a group. Obviously, position and pitchers are going to be doing their own things on different times, but I think we do a really good job at keeping it as one whole unit. And especially for the pitchers, like, there are going to be days when they struggle on the mound, and there's going to be days where the hitters can't contribute like the pitchers. So I think we just do a really good job of, when the game's over, reconvene in the locker room and just say, like, hey, we got your back. Like, just because you guys didn't throw the best game doesn't mean that you're not going to come out tomorrow and shove it. So I think that that's something huge for us, is we can go back to the locker room and say, hey, man, like, you didn't have your best stuff, but you're going to bring it tomorrow.
When we talked to you last year, you said that the player that you like to replicate, like, most of your game off of is Juan Soto.
Oh, yeah.
And he's huge on walks and slug.
Yep.
And that's the same way for you.
Yep.
How do you kind of replicate that, and how big is getting on base just walking for you?
Oh, 100%. So I actually remember you asking me that last year, and Juan Soto was always the best guy to watch for me, because he had all the power in the world, but knew that just getting on base is going to do him the best job. So I think that when I watch him play, I can see a little bit of a version of myself, because I try to simplify the game so much to just say, hey, let me get on. And I know at some point my bat's going to do something, but if I'm on base, something good can happen. Mm-hmm. There's stats out there. I mean, I think it's like almost 500, like literally 50% of the time, the first runner on base is going to score. So that's where, like, a guy like Juan Soto, when he can work the count, he can see pitches and not strike out. That's like how valuable mm-hmm. he is. So being able to watch that, and I can learn from him and be like, hey, he's selective. Like, he knows his bat's good enough that he gets into a 2-strike count and he's not going to strike out. Yeah. So I think that's, like, for me, the most valuable thing is I'm going to have spurts of showing my power, but I want to be as consistent I can as on being on base. Yeah. And that's huge for me. 100%.
With that on base ability and that power, I've noticed when I call a lot of games, you have this ability when you're so ready at the plate that if you don't like a pitch, you'll literally shake it off, it looks like.
Yeah.
Is that something you've always done?
Oh, I've always done that. I actually, for a little while, I was actually doing the Soto shuffle a little bit. I would kind of like shuffle through the batter's box a little bit, and I kind of move my back knee a little bit like he does. But definitely when I see a pitch that I don't like, I will shake my head a lot. And even my parents have picked up on that, but it's been something I've always done, just bringing a little bit of extra competitive edge to the game. That I like when I'm in the box. But no, I do that quite often.
We've noticed, and I think it's a lot of fun. I got another one while I'm still here. You mentioned before, a couple of questions ago, you live with Luke.
And yes.
I mean, just to fawn over one of your teammates for a second, he's had an incredible season.
Oh, my.
To turn around and become a scholarship player like this, I'm sure it's been really cool to see.
Dude, it's awesome. We were so tight, like, last year. I remember talking to him every day. I was like, dude, like, you're going to get a shot. Like, you bust your butt, you work hard, and you do the little things right. And that's something that, like, you can't teach that stuff. So I think once our coaches started to realize, like, hey, we got to give this kid a chance. And, I mean, he took that chance and really ran away with it. Like, that kid is something special.
He caught at the corn crib, right?
Does he
ever want to still catch?
So he did catch at the corn crib, but he was doing that more as in a utility guy. Like, he wanted to do anything he could to step foot on that field. So he kind of said, like, hey, ISU, if you need me to catch, I'll catch. But right now, I mean, we have two really good catchers, and he's like, dude, I want to play the shortstop position, and now he's getting the chance to, so it's awesome.
Right, because he plays short sometimes, and I saw earlier on in the season that when Luke was playing third, Greg was over in one of the middle infield spots. You guys have a pretty solid infield. That connection really always works no matter how you plug it in.
Yeah, so that was something that our head coach and all of our assistant coaches love, is the ability to, like, you know, have a high like fielding percentage. And I think we're second in the Valley in fielding percentage. Like, they take it very serious. We do a really good job with that. And our infielders, man, like, you could stick any one of them at any spot and they're going to get the job done. So no, it's awesome to watch, especially being in the outfield and getting to see it every day.
Yeah. Wait, right.
Oh, go ahead, Mikey.
No, I didn't have a question. Oh, I'm just staying with him.
Yeah. So you hit home runs. I mean, as someone that's really almost never hit a home run, what sort of mindsets are you in your at bats that lead to the most success, either for home runs or just getting a base knock?
Yeah. So I mean, mindset, like you just mentioned, huge for hitting, because I mean, you could have all the talent, but if you don't have a good approach, like, it's not going to do you any justice. So I think, it's developed a lot over the years. I have to say, when I was younger, it was swing the bat as hard as I could and just hope I made contact. But I mean, once you get into college baseball, man, these pitchers are good, and you just have to realize, like, for me, it is making the job as simple as possible. As for me, it's make contact, it's put the ball in play. And for me, I mean, I'm a bigger dude. When I put the ball in play, better things are going to happen. The ball's going to be coming off harder. So it's really good. I know some guys, they're like, dude, I got to kind of think shoot in the gap. Like, I have to hit a double here. And that just kind of gives them enough power to start driving the ball to that way. But for me, it's like, dude, I just want to touch it. Like, that's all I look for. And I try to keep the game simple. The home runs will come, but when I put the ball in play, good things will happen.
You getting the green light 3-0?
Oh, dude, I have gotten the green light 3-0. I actually remember my first, we played a fall ball game, and I was a freshman, and I wasn't making the starting lineup the first game. But I remember we were at Eastern Illinois, and it was my second at bat as a college baseball player, and it was 3-0 green light. And I hit an absolute bomb, and it was probably, to this day, the farthest ball I've ever hit. And I came back to that dugout, and my coaches were looking at me like, you were supposed to take that pitch. I was like, I'm sorry, man. I took a swing at it. It was actually not even, like, higher than my shin off the ground. I just kind of scooped it. But, no, that I do have the 3-0 green light, and a lot of times I take it just to work the count. But, no, it is a good feeling to have that green light.
You talk about your coaches there a little bit. I got a quick story. It was during that rain delay a couple weekends ago. It was against Valpo. It was against Valpo. It was during that rain delay. That Sunday when Coach didn't want to do the doubleheader. He wanted to play on Sunday. We were hanging out in the booth, and then me and Coach were talking for a long time. You guys got the game in. You won the game. Mm-hmm. It was all good. I mean, he made the right choice. And then a couple days later, I'm calling the game at U of I on the Tuesday.
Oh,
and
yeah.
I go to the bathroom. I put my headset down. I go to the bathroom between the fourth and fifth inning, and I'm washing my hands, and I open the door, and guess who's on the other side of the door? Coach Holm, just walking into the public bathroom, just ready to go. And I know some of the players are doing the same thing. I just thought, and the funniest part of it was hey, man, good to see you again. Like, he just seems like a good dude. It seems like he's a good coach. And I just want to know from your perspective.
Dude, it's a blessing to play for that guy. I was originally committed to the University of Kentucky, and I love their head coach, great guy. But when I met Holm in my recruiting process, I was like, that's a different type of coach. The best way I could put it is he keeps you relaxed as much as you can even imagine. Like, I came in as a freshman, my nerves were through the roof, and he sat me down, and he's like, dude, you got nothing to worry about. Like, you got to relax. And he is the coach that's going to say, like, guys, we are playing way too tense right now. Like, we got to relax. And that's just the guy he is. He'll go to the bathroom, whatever inning it is. Dude, that man is so relaxed. And it's really good to play for that guy, because it keeps the whole dugout in a good spot. So no, he is definitely a character, and I love him for sure.
Does he ever talk about his pro ball days at all?
Not, he doesn't quite as often bring it up as you'd think, but when you ask, like, he'll talk about it. So, I mean, guys that their interest is in pro ball someday, like, he will sit down and talk to you about it. But he's a coach first, and he does the best job he can. But no, he definitely has talked about his coach or playing career a little bit.
keeping it in that dugout, you mentioned Lawrence and his work ethic. Who's another player on your team that just has such a great work ethic and does not get enough recognition?
Ooh, that's a really tough one. I know for pitchers, I'm not around them as much as I obviously can be, but for pitchers, I'm going to have to say Tyrell Chadwick, our Saturday guy. I mean, that guy is doing his post-throw every single day, and it does not matter when it is. I remember we came off the bus after a big loss at Evansville, and we were supposed to go eat, and he's like, sorry, I'm not making the bus. I'm doing my post-throw. And I'm like, this guy hasn't eaten in hours, and he's just going to still do his post-throw. But that's crazy to me. So he's got the different type of work ethic that you like to see in a starter, because that sets the table for all the other pitchers. Right. Like, they get to watch that every single day. The position guys, I'm just trying to think of one that would really stand out to me. But if I'm going to be honest, all of them do. And I know that's like a cliche statement, but
it's great to hear, though.
They all work hard, man. So I can't put one out specifically.
All right. Well, we'll wrap up with this. You obviously talked about your original commitment to Kentucky. What is it about Illinois State through 2 years that you're just excited for, that's been fun, and into year two now that you're having so much success?
Oh, yeah. I think the Illinois State, the amount it feels like home to me is surreal. Like, I've never been able to call this, like, to call any other place besides my home home. And that's the best part about being here is, I mean, one, I'm close to home, but everybody is super nice. They're welcoming. As soon as I got here on campus my freshman year, like, I was greeted by the whole team, the whole campus. So I think that that energy and vibe is so contagious. So being here, it's just, I mean, keeps me comfortable, and I love it. Like, there's nothing else I can say about it.
We really appreciate it. Any quick comments before we go to break on
any series? Shout out?
Got to sweep Indiana State, man. That's the goal. But I'm excited for the series. That's all I got, man.
Stuff the Duff campaign. Get some fans in there.
Yep, coming up Saturday, man. We got to stuff it up.
Are you signing mini bets if people ask on Saturday? Fans?
I'll sign my hand away, dude. Let's get after it. Let's get it done.
Sounds good, man. Thanks for coming out.
I appreciate you giving me a chance. Thank you.
WZND, the pulse of Redbird Nation, where Daniel Pacella comes to tell some stories and have some fun. That was a great interview, guys. I enjoyed it.
He's awesome.
That was fun. I believe him, too. He'll sign some mini bats. I can't do it as an impartial journalist, but I believe it. He'll sign his hand off. I believe it. That's a great giveaway on Saturday. Mini bats, like, you get it like a game, but you don't have to buy them like you would at the Cubs game. They're pretty sweet. I mean, I love shirts and stuff, but the shirts are, like, constant. This is, like, unique and cool.
They've been doing some pretty good giveaways for baseball. Usually it's all basketball season, but, like, baseball and softball, like, you weren't there with us, but when me and Liam called the game on Friday, we were able to get a cool pinstripe softball jersey with the number 24 on it, which is Dan's number, actually. I should have worn it today.
Could have had him sign his hand off.
Yeah. No. And then they gave out the 24 shirt jersey for baseball, and now they're doing this one. So I don't think it's directly for Dan, but it's a heck of a year to pick it. I think it's because of the year 2024. But sure enough, Dan Pacella is the best player, I would say, amongst baseball and softball right now.
Cody Bellinger. The year 2024.
Yeah.
Just a good number all around. Me and Braden get to graduate this year. This is our third to last show. Did you realize that? Next week we're going to have an NFL draft show. And then the week after we'll be our senior
Kentucky
show.
Derby.
And the Kentucky Derby. You're right. Ooh. You're right. And then we'll have our senior show. So stay aware. Those who are listening, we'll have some programming updates out for our final show on, what is that, May 3rd?
Yeah, it'll be longer, too.
May 3rd, it'll
it
be
might
a 2
stretch into the 4th.
It'll probably be a 2-hour show if we don't go past midnight.
May the 4th
midnight.
Be with you.
May the 4th be with you. We'll probably do a 2-hour show like we did last year, because we'll have myself, Braden, of course, we'll have Joey and Julian, our new hosts, we'll have Ben, and then we'll also get a chance to sit down with each of our WZND seniors, sports or not, just to kind of get it's not even necessarily about sports. I mean, we'll talk sports, but it's just a 15-minute on air, you know, giving your thank you for covering sports on this radio station for however many years. Braden, how many years has it been for you? 3 now?
I started first semester sophomore year, so it's been 3 years.
I got you beat by one semester. I was second semester freshman year during the pandemic. Everything was pre-recorded. We couldn't do it live like this. They were doing Red Zone on Zoom.
It was on Zoom.
It was Red Zone on Zoom. The last time we interviewed Daniel Pacella was on Zoom, but that's just because it was more convenient that time. But I think in person was way better. Anyway, we're going to round the bases on some sports stories that we have found interesting this week. I'll lead off rounding first base. I don't know. I'm getting kind of indifferent about this NBA play-in tournament thing. I was really mad about it a couple nights ago, and now it's like, I watched the Bulls play last night, and for a lot of it, and I was like, Coby White was fun, and I'm just like, the whole thing's silly, but like, might as well lean into it. Like, I don't think they should be doing it. Like, if they put it in NFL standards, it would be like the 7-10 Vikings and Bears playing first spot in the playoffs. But I don't think it's valid. But if they're gonna do it, why not let the Bulls go for a run? Is my whole point. The Bulls got to play the Heat tomorrow, and they don't have Jimmy Butler, and then they got to go play the Celtics, which is where the train ends. But I don't know. The NBA play-in thing, 20 out of 30 teams make the playoffs. Teams don't tank because of it, and they get extra chances at the playoffs.
I don't want to repeat myself. I sometimes lose track of what I've said. But I think, to me, it's just like you are perpetuating mediocrity, of course. You're putting a team that won, that was 10 more losses than they had wins, into the playoffs with a chance to win, and they were within 15 points of winning. It's so silly. And like you said, it perpetuates mediocrity, not to mention you already are doing that by having a draft lottery, which makes it to where you can be the worst team yep. ever and not get the first overall pick. And like, we didn't need it anyway. They already had, even before the play-in tournament, 8 teams. It was very much, pretty much every year, there would be at least one or two teams that would have a losing record make the playoffs, and they never stood a chance. It's so silly that because they want to just add more playoff games, they are forcing some of these teams like the Bulls to sit in 10 straight years where they've never been relevant. And if you yeah. take away the chance to go for an 8th seed and be like, oh, that's enough, that's fine, we're happy with that, then you get the Bulls to start being willing to do the rebuild right. that they've needed to do.
That was what I was upset about a couple nights ago before I saw them play. And I'm not saying they're going to go for an NBA championship. I'm just saying I'm going to just lean into it. Like, it's life's too short to get too mad about it. I was getting mad at Ben about it the other night. We were hanging out and we were talking about it. And Ben was getting mad at me because I just was old man yells at Cloud about this NBA play-in tournament. Because I'm like, this is just feels so silly. For what you just said, Braden, like, there's going to be teams like the Bulls, like the Atlanta Hawks, like others, because of the draft lottery on one end and the play-in tournament for the top 20 teams. There's absolutely no incentive to make your team any better or worse if you're already in the mid-range, because you're going to make playoff money anyway.
But TV gets priority on all this. They exactly. get terrible times to start a championship game. They will not get rid of the draft lottery because it gets ratings. They will not get rid of all these extra playoff games in basketball. They won't get rid of a horrendous wild card weekend with terrible commentating that's taken over MLB. It's just, they're not going to get rid of it because TV takes priority in that situation.
It's silly. I don't like it. I know I was yelling at Mikey because he was going a little too old man yells at Cloud over it. I think the only thing that's kind of holding it back right now, because I don't necessarily think the NBA has like a bit, like, I don't think they're the biggest fans of it either, even though Silver's like addicted to just changing the league for some reason.
Mm-hmm.
The only thing I think is holding it back is the Miami Heat run a year ago.
Yeah.
And that's not going to happen this year because Jimmy Butler's out a significant amount of time. But the fact that Miami Heat were able to, they were 3 points away, or excuse me, they were 2 minutes away from going home to the Chicago Bulls. And then they went into Milwaukee, beat them in 5, and just cruised through the playoffs until they ran into the juggernaut that was the Denver Nuggets. I think that's the only thing that's holding it back from, like, all right, we have to have a conversation over this. I what made me the most angry was, I talked to you about this, Mikey, was, you know, Bleacher Report and their, they love the NBA. You know, we all know that Bleacher Report loves the NBA, and they're just tweeting out, LeBron James and the Lakers are 3-0 in the play-in tournament all time. It's like, he shouldn't even be playing in the play-in tournament if we're considering him as this generational player. Like, get out. Or he is a generational player, but as the GOAT,
get out of here. I completely get what you're saying with that. Like, it's
just annoying. It's stupid. And, like, the fact, like, it's still technically the regular season, and these stats don't count because last night was technically Coby White's career high, but it's not because...
And they made a point to mention that in the broadcast about 100 times.
Yeah.
They kept pointing it out in the broadcast, Richard Jefferson and the ESPN crew, they every time Coby White would score a late basket, like his last 4 or 5, it was like, but it's a career high, but it doesn't matter. It's a career high, but it doesn't matter. It's a career high, but it doesn't matter. So it's a career high in a game that... almost like the California runner rule in baseball. Like, is it truly an RBI if it's not an earned run? It's the age-old adage. As we round second base, and I throw it over to Braden Fogerson for your topic.
I don't have anything that we have to get too in-depth on, mainly because we're going to talk about this sport in the other segment. But Cardinals, wanting $500 million from the city of St. Louis to upgrade their stadium, which is already, I mean, their stadium is well known for being super good. They really renovated and were successful in renovating it already. But this team that is bad in terms of actual playing wants to sit there and say, for at the worst possible time, because they are not good yet, say, well, you guys should invest in this team anyway, even though they already have a team that's in downtown, a beautiful stadium with a ballpark village that was the first that and turned into tons of stadiums copying what was already a success there. You already have a great stadium. Why do you have to make the taxpayers play for it, pay for it? They already paid for it to be there. They already support it. They already sell it out all the time.
If the Cardinals would have gone to a World Championship Series in the last couple of years, do you think there'd be more taxpayer support behind that?
Well, I think, to me, I think people of St. Louis already love the team. They're like,
right,
Chicago, for example, because it's the closest team. They have two teams in baseball. They have two teams. You know, they have all sorts of sports. St. Louis has a major league team. They lost their NFL team, and now they support the Battle Hawks like crazy. They have a soccer team, and then they have a hockey team. It's not the same, but it's when you have a smaller market, but you have teams that really take their city and like own it. Basically, you put the stadiums right in downtown. That is successful. And I think that, you know, the only thing left to do is start winning playoff games. And instead of trying to focus on finding a way to improve a team, yeah, we'll talk about that all that next segment, but instead you're wasting your time asking for taxpayer money for no reason.
I think another team just did that recently too, asking for some money from the city, and it's the Chicago White Sox, which kind of in a similar vein of what you're speaking right now. So, yeah, I don't know.
But it's even worse because they're even less support. You know, like we said, St. Louis without the Cardinals would be insanely different. Chicago without the White Sox wouldn't be really any different to me.
Oh, no.
Tomorrow will be Friday.
Yeah.
The 1907 Brooklyn Super Bowls, the only other team aside from the White Sox who have
next segment.
I'm going to finish. Who have been shut out six times through the first 16 games. Ben?
Golf.
Golf. There was a little motion when he said that.
That's golf.
There was a little motion. He said golf and kind of hit his stomach. Ben is into golf.
Not even rounding the bases.
2024, Ben is a golfer.
I am a golfer.
We just want to recap the Masters.
Yeah, that's kind of where I was alluding to.
Yeah, I like that.
I guess this is more of a personal soapbox. I'm addicted to golf. It's actually horrible. Not bad, but it might be my like third favorite sport now to watch. Scottie Scheffler is like the greatest golfer on the planet. I don't think anyone could beat that man, even though he's not doing too well in the RBC Heritage right now.
He didn't get much practice time.
Yeah, good point. It's just the Masters is awesome. What a great event. Like, we obviously work in broadcasting and whatnot, and you guys see it when you're doing games for ESPN, and I do it behind the scenes, and just how hard it is to put a broadcast together. I don't think there's like a broadcast that's more beautifully strung together and put together than the Masters.
It's just like a movie.
It's literally like a movie that you're watching, especially on Sunday. Mm-hmm. Just Jim Nance just talking in a soft, quiet voice the entire time until the last call. And then, you know, they'll show this B-roll of these beautiful pink flowers and all this. Man, I'm obsessed, bro. It's...
The live montages where the VOs where they go over each player like in the day, like they have the dramatic music and he's just quietly saying, you know, McIlroy gets par on 17.
Yeah. I thought last year was Nance's last year.
No, that was for March Madness. Masters. Thank God. Vern Lundquist actually retired this year. He had a very minimal role in the broadcast this year and kind of got his last chops in.
And there was also the iconic meme. He was behind a tree. Mm-hmm. Went to go shake
Tiger
Woods.
Oh, that
Woods.
Was him? Yes. I didn't know whose hand it was.
Went to go shake Tiger Woods' hand, and there was, you know, Tiger Woods just iconic memes
incredible
of him just shaking
memes.
People's hands.
Incredible.
Like, it's just...
Yes. It's getting really popular. I found out when I was editing some video for the TV10 reunion last week that Vern Lundquist was a multiple-time Illinois State visitor for the Missouri Valley Conference Championship, which would make sense because CBS, and he would come to Horton for the Missouri Valley Championship before it was always Arch Madness in St. Louis when it would travel when they would play it at Horton, Vern Lunkus would be here to call the games. And it was an old video of Tom LaMonica, who's a friend of the pod, obviously, from you guys, talking about in this 80s, young Tom, saying that Horton Fieldhouse got so loud that Vern Lunkus couldn't even hear when he was announcing, is what you told Tom LaMonica. So I wonder if he was thinking about that when he was sitting behind a tree at Augusta, shaking hands with Tiger.
Oh, I'm sure he was. Wow, it's like, really quiet. Just like Horton Fieldhouse.
Really quiet and serene here. I could hear everything, unlike Horton Fieldhouse in 1987. That was terrible. that was the bottom line. No, it was had to be earlier. It was like, well, I guess it could have been the late 80s because Redbird opened in 1990, and that was also something we talked about with that. Anything else on rounding the bases before we wrap it up? We're going to get into some baseball?
Maybe really quick, just mention the awesome deal that Caitlin Clark got with Nike.
Yes.
Just that rocks. That's so cool. I can't wait to see her merch. I might need to buy some because Caitlin Clark is awesome.
Signature shoe is coming.
Signature shoe is coming.
Eight-figure deal is the report. When we come back, we'll talk a little bit about some Major League Baseball. It is a big off day in Major League Baseball. Most teams are already off. The Cubs were set to play, and that got postponed due to rain in Normal and Chicago because that's where the Cubs play, Chicago, and I was wrong. But it's also raining in Normal. That's what was on my head. Daniel Pacella came in, and it's the magic of radio, so you can't see him, but he had a wet shirt because they were outside. And they had to walk all the way back to Horton Fieldhouse. I felt bad. I could have offered to drive him in the Z&D car. I could have just had you guys host the rest of the show. I felt, but he was nice enough to come into the studio and do a live interview, and then they had to just trudge back home. So when they say that Daniel Pacella is missing the weekend series because he has the flu or something, because he was out in the cold rain.
It's not our fault.
It's not our fault. You didn't hear it here.
I'm just saying, we can get an umbrella.
We could have given him an umbrella. We had so many options.
Enough tuition
yeah, that
money.
Was probably
we
not.
We had so many options. We could have helped him out. We could have offered an umbrella. We could have offered a ride. Well, I didn't know they were going to walk. Then we would have to do it over Zoom again, and that was so much better in person. Yeah. Anyway, let's talk baseball. Let's talk baseball. The MLB. Braden kind of got with the Cardinals a little bit there. Let's start with the Cubs instead. The Cubs. Ben, what was that?
Nothing.
All right. The Cubs, 11-7 on the season, second in the National League Central behind the Brewers, who are 11-6. They've played one less game. They will play this weekend against the Miami Marlins. And we start there as the Cubs went 5-4 on their Western road trip.
Nothing to complain about, really. I mean, there was a couple losses you wish you could take back, like that 8-0 collapse in San Diego. Was that 2 weeks? Was that
It was a week
Monday?
And a half ago, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, week ago Monday.
That was a really bad loss. And then the Arizona loss on Tuesday night, you just got to get it in. Yeah, they're in a good spot right now, especially considering the fact that your two best players are going to miss probably at least another 3 weeks. I know Justin Steele's, they're probably going to come back around the same time, I would assume, right?
Mm-hmm.
So Steele and Suzuki both out at tough blows. And 11-7 record, I'm not complaining considering the fact that those two guys are out and Kyle Hendricks is essentially just a non-factor every fifth day at this point. So they've been able to defy odds, really, really bad bullpen, I would say, at this point, besides a couple names. But the lineup's hitting really well, and some guys are just starting to break out. Talking Michael Busch, besides Suzuki, he's been the Cubs' best player, and he's going to have to keep rolling like he has been. You hope Nico Horner continues to step up like he did in Arizona, Bellinger as well. So not too much to complain about in Cubs land other than the injury bug and Kyle Hendricks.
Michael Busch, number one ranked MLB top 10 rookies by the Fox Sports MLB staff today.
Saw that.
Shota Imanaga, number three. And the Cubs had two.
The top comment on that is the Cubs already had the number one farm system before those guys were even in Cubs jerseys.
Things are looking up in Chicago, but I don't think even they could get the taxpayers behind a new stadium, Braden, because everyone loves Wrigley Field. So we'll go back. Well, we put a bookmark in the St. Louis Cardinals conversation. We'll get back to it. And talk more about the on-field product. One of the reasons you said that they cannot get their renovations accepted is because the team is struggling. And why is that?
Well, the team has not won a series finale yet. And you went into the season saying the pitching was horrendous last year, the hitting was okay, but could not make up for it. And then you go into this season, and the opposite is true. You've had Lance Lynn do very well. You've had still no earned runs through two starts from Gray, and he's been on a pitch count, but he's not given up a run yet. He's been very good. I think that in terms of how they hit, Arenado and Goldschmidt are both not good yet. Goldschmidt kind of tends to get a little bit better throughout the season and struggles, but Arenado's stance has been very much a talking point on Cardinals Twitter because it just looks a little bit broken. And there were, you know, there's also videos that circulated of, you know, some hitting coaches that tried to work on the stances of some of these vets on the Cardinals and people saying like, oh, you broke them. But, you know, the complete opposite of what you expected, the offense just can't get going enough. Gorman leads in home runs and he's got three, and Arenado leads in hits, but he hasn't really done anything big yet. Hasn't really scored a lot, you know, hasn't had a lot of big notable moments. It's just very much like small ball, and it doesn't add up to much because this team is horrendous with runners in scoring position. So just not good yet.
I'll occasionally find myself in Cardinals Twitter whenever I like a Cardinals hate tweet.
I have a little bit of Cubs Twitter too because of your podcast, because I follow your podcast.
But when I like a Cubs or Cardinals hate tweet, all of a sudden, like for the next hour, it'll be like Cardinals stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And going back to your Arenado thing, I've been seeing the swing difference, and it just kind of goes back to that injury they never put him on the IL for last year, if I'm correct.
Yes.
And it's just been, he just hasn't been the same since then.
Mm. And I'm glad that you brought that up because there's been some injuries that have been very questionably handled by the Cardinals.
Yeah.
Tommy Edman entered the offseason and he had a surgery and they didn't tell us. And they had like a mid offseason update and they're like, okay, this is what we got. Like, this is how the team looks. This is what we're doing. This is how our free agent looks. Oh, by the way, Tommy Edman kind of had surgery. We waited until the season was over and nothing was really going on anyway to tell anyone. And now you just sit there without Edman. And it's weird how that was handled. Mason Wynn has been not starting, even though he's been one of their best players. And everyone is asking, well, why is Wynn not starting as much? And they're just like, oh, by the way, he's been a little bit, I think he had like a back problem. Like, just tell us, tell people what's going on. They're going to doubt how you manage a team if you don't tell them. The only thing you do by not giving them transparency is adding more fuel to the fire of like, what is this team trying to do? You've got to tell them what's going on.
One more thing before we move on from Cardinal land. What is up with this video of Ali Marmol in Oakland? Grabbing the security guard's shirt?
People kind of blew that out. And what's frustrating is I love John Boy Media, and they're basically turning into Barstool, and it's kind of annoying.
I've been seeing a lot of John Boy Media hate for some reason.
Yeah, they're very much, people are hating on them today because they had like a funny interview quote and they were like, oh, they're going to turn this into a horrendous shirt. And then they did. And it's like a shirt that you could not wear in public. and like, I don't know, that and the whole like clickbaity stuff. And I don't know, just people are kind of growing tired of John Boy.
That's where I saw it, the clip of Trevor Plouffe complaining about Ali Marmol.
What was the deal with the A's thing? I saw the clip, and what was the context?
There's a security guard, someone that is probably in a situation where he can't be fired. He got in the way of Ali Marmol while he was trying to figure out whether he wanted to challenge a play, and by the time he got out of his way, his 30 seconds came out. And then also, there was a clip like the next day where Matt Carpenter was like walking back behind the dugout and that dude was just in his way again. So
Matt Carpenter's on the Cardinals again.
I was about to say that was
but when you just said that, my brain was like, oh, Matt Carpenter's still playing baseball.
I went to the Padres.
And he's back on the Cardinals.
I was like, wait, why are we talking about the Padres?
I think it might not be Carpenter. I think it's Descalzo, one of the coaches.
Descalzo.
He was pretty good for the Cubs.
My least favorite Cubs player.
He sat like the entire year, but they were afraid to cut him.
No. It was the offseason of Bryce Harper, right? And the Ricketts were like, we're gonna spend all this money. You know, there were so many people available that offseason, and their marquee move was Daniel Descalzo to be their second baseman. or something. I don't know. Whatever it might have been. And just, he's the worst Cubs player ever. I hate him. I hate his guts. And of course, he's coaching with Ollie Marmol, who I might hate even more. So that's a great 1-2 duo right there of just a-holes.
Yeah.
Daniel Descalso, 82 games for the Cubs in 2019, batted .173.
There's no way. I didn't even think he was that bad, and he was that bad. I was thinking like 200. How many home runs? One? Two?
Two.
Oh, my God.
15 RBIs.
Worst Cub.
Played in 15 of them.
My hate for Daniel Descalso is on record, and I will... I hope you have a good time managing that team, or being an assistant.
It's going to be interesting to revisit this when we play more NL Central opponents. Cardinals have the Brewers this weekend. So
Cubs don't have an NL Central opponent till mid-May.
Yeah, that's what I think.
Crazy.
I texted Ben on whatever day that was when Hendricks pitched, and we said it's going to be – no, I put it on Twitter. I didn't even text you. I straight up tweeted it. You said it might be time for Hendricks to go on a 60-day IL stint.
Phantom
60-day IL stint, and then I said – Daniel Descalso. That's all I said. Though they never really put, I don't think they ever really put him in the IL. I think they just kind of had him as a utility guy.
And Jason Hayward.
Yeah, but Jason Hayward was more visible. I don't know why they did it to Daniel Descalso.
Because he was horrible.
What is this comparison we talked about? Maybe, Brandon, you can cue in on this one. This comparison that my brother said that Garrett Cooper is the new Frank Schwindel.
That's just not...
I don't know if I like it.
Tom,
I don't like it.
Love you, Tom, but that just was a bad take.
He said that he said the same energy.
Anything about how he's been doing, so I don't think he's a Frank Schwindel. He only plays every, like, I remember Schwindel being like...
Yeah.
The different...
Cooper plays every third day.
Is he in AAA, or where did he go?
No, Cooper's playing every day.
No, I meant Schwindel.
Now he's playing recently. Schwindel's
in the Mexico League.
Yeah, Schwindel was playing for the Eagles last I checked. Yeah. Vamos Eagles. Yeah. It was like a week after he got cut from the Cubs that he was playing for a team called the Eagles, and Obvious Shirts tweeted it and said of him hitting just a... Just a tank in the Mexican League, and it just said, Vamos Eagles! In all caps. And then there was obvious, you can believe it, just like you're talking about shirts, there was Obvious Shirts that said Vamos Eagles with the Frank the Tank emblem.
I'm happy that the first baseman of the future thing never happened with Frank Schwindel, because he's so ugly to look at.
Hey, he's won two more NL Player of the Month than you ever will.
If we're talking looks, then Garrett Cooper and Frank Schwindel, that might be where the comparison.
What did I
Tom's
say about
talking.
Garrett Cooper though? To Tom, Ridge?
I'm just kidding. They're much better people than I am. Probably.
He's a bit pre-qualified. Like,
oh yeah, Garrett,
like he comes
he's got
out
an All-Star game
right.
on his belt.
It's one more
Cooper.
Than Frank Schwindel ever will.
Yes.
Well, who knows? Maybe Frank Schwindel will get another chance in the major league someday. I don't know if he's still playing. Is he still playing in the Mexico League? Let's check. I don't know. Go over to the White Sox farm real quick
while
I find that out.
Sox are bad and. No one's coming to the stadium, which is also sad.
They're bad. They are horrible.
But everyone knew that.
No. This is horrific. Like, this is a horrific start compared to what I think people thought. I didn't think I knew they'd be bad, but the fact that when you take Luis Robert, Yoan Moncada, Eloy Jimenez is back now, but when you take all three of those guys out of that lineup, they maybe put on the field the worst 1-9 I've ever seen in my life when you have all three of those guys out. And, I mean, what are we talking already? Negative 54 run differential where how many games into the season? 18? They've already dug themselves in a big enough hole in the AL Central that they just won't be able to come back from. This is bad. I've seen the stands. I'm not really thinking too much about it because in the summer it's way different because people just like going to Sox games, especially when they're $2. But yeah, it's a bad look right now, just the organization in general. I saw someone on Twitter yesterday pulled off a sell the team Equinox. Did you hear about
this? It was
Tyler
Ackie from ESPN 1000. He was tweeting all about it the whole time.
He did the doubleheader for the White Sox and then went to the Bulls playoff game.
Frank Schwindel got signed by the Long Island Ducks just a week ago in the Atlantic League, professional baseball adjacent, not high A, low A, anything. It's just like, you know, it's a professional partner league. The Atlantic League, Frank Schwindel signed. He is now a Long Island Duck. In this press release, it says, in 145 MLB games, batted .269, blah, blah, blah. The New Jersey native was a two-time National League Rookie of the Month. In 2021, he earned NL Player of the Week honors. In September 2021, he finished sixth in National League Rookie of the Year voting that season to the eventual winner, Jonathan India, of the Cincinnati Reds.
He finished second?
Sixth.
Sixth.
But now he is a Long Island Duck. Quack on, Frank. Quack on. We'll be back next week with some NFL draft talk.
This has been Red Zone.
Robinson will now drive inside. Going to find Mary Crompton for her first three of the day. And it's good.
Curry owned the league last year. Oh, and sure. Personal awards and numbers.
We'll take off with you next Thursday at 6. For now, you can listen to any past broadcasts on WZND.com. Touchdown in 3, 2, 1.
JD, I've got five.